Breaking news, the Supreme Court rules against life.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a big case we've been waiting on regarding an abortion law in Louisiana. It required doctors to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. The entire argument, essentially, well, there were two prongs to it, but the main argument during this case was whether or not that was an undue burden, whether it would shut down clinics, leaving women in Louisiana with very few, maybe only one abortion clinic they could actually visit in-state to get this procedure done.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It's a long opinion, a lot to get through, but the bottom line is this decision strikes down the Louisiana abortion law that put restrictions into place. The authors of the legislation said it was about protecting the women who visited these clinics to make sure that if they had procedures there, there were medical procedures in place that would allow them to get to a hospital if they needed to.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And yet another Supreme Court decision, 5-4. The Supreme Court has struck down a law that was similar to the Texas law that was there in 2016, though there was a major flip in one of the justices, and that was the Chief Justice, who when a similar law that was actually broader was up before the court in 2016, though it was clear he would be in the dissent, he had no problem siding with Texas as a dissenter. It was a 5-3 case. In this case, again, you see something very different from Chief Justice Roberts. I mean, it's a reminder. This is not so shocking with him because of what happened with the Affordable Care Act. And remember how he did the same, similar thing, actually, to this opinion, just as a unfortunate reminder to people who are listening to the broadcast, Dad, is he did that same thing where the case itself, he didn't really agree with the reasoning.
Right.
But he agrees with the outcome, so he made up his own way to get there. Which we were talking about on Friday is the difference between usually our judges and theirs is that they have in their mind where they're going to be. They just come up with a reasoning to be there.
So
our guys actually follow their reasoning.
Yeah,
and he didn't. Again, he's actually showed. He followed the conclusion.
I think here's the issue. And I think this is the issue that we have to be very cognizant of. John Roberts 3 years ago said the law was constitutional, a law that was much broader than this particular law. This was a more narrowly tailored law. Four justices dissented. Last time, of course, then you had the switch of justices. What happens here? John Roberts says, I don't agree necessarily with the reasoning of the majority, but because of stare decisis, I am going to stick with that opinion. Now, if that was the case, Plessy versus Ferguson, which was separate but equal, would still be the law of the land. There are times when stare decisis, the courts realize things were wrong. Karamatsu, where the internment of Japanese Americans in World War II, that case today would obviously not be followed. So this application of stare decisis, Andy, the Latin, of course, important here, but John Roberts had an easy way to say, look, I thought it was wrong then, I think it was wrong now, but he didn't go that way.
No, and that is very disappointing. Stare decisis simply means that cases that have been decided one way, the Supreme Court or any court should continue to follow that precedent because it's binding on a subsequent court. But as you pointed out, sometimes old decisions like Plessy versus Ferguson and Korematsu are wrong, and you have to say that they're wrong, and you can't rely on stare decisis, which is judicial precedent, to say that they are right. And John Roberts disappoints yet again by having the opportunity to follow what he did in the Texas case and the Louisiana case. He didn't do that. He joined with the majority and, again, disappoints, once again, those of us who are pro-life and who believe in the sanctity of human life.
All right, folks, we're going to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. If you got questions about this case of the Supreme Court, again, 1-800-684-3110. Your calls, your comments. I will point out, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, part of that strong dissent. There is this question, though, is it different now?
Have you ever seen a Democratic appointee to the Supreme Court become a conservative?
No, we talked about that on Friday.
Byron White, only example.
But
that's been a long time.
A lot of pressure on John Roberts, and he saw what happened in 2012 when you go against your principles, against your views, even when you've been on the record with those views, and you uphold their laws, even if the reasoning doesn't make any sense.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
All right, let me just, I want to ask this to Andy and then CeCe Howells join us. Because John Roberts falls on the issue of stare decisis. He said the decision was in 2016. I thought the court is wrong here on the substance, but I'm bound by stare decisis. What does stare decisis mean, Andy?
Stare decisis means that cases on similar facts should be decided the same way. And once a court has spoken on something and has decided something a certain way, then it should be bound and cannot change its opinion and its decision-making process anymore. That's the way they decided. And when you had separate but equal in Plessy versus Ferguson, when you had the Japanese internment camps and the Korematsu decision, as you pointed out, stare decisis would mean that we can't deviate from that today. Well, of course we can. And we should be able to deviate from decisions that are wrongly decided. This was a cop-out by the Chief Justice and very disappointing, Jay.
Yeah. Let's bring in CeCe Howells, Senior Counsel for the ACLJ. And before I go to CeCe, Jordan, your sense of what's going on here. I mean, is this? Do you think these are political decisions? Do you think these are legal decisions?
I think it's political decisions by John Roberts. He likes the praise. I think he thinks that, in some way, this is good for his legacy when he does this thing like the Affordable Care Act. And then after the Affordable Care Act, he was in the dissent on a law that was much broader than Louisiana's. I mean, legally speaking, it doesn't read that much, but it was different. The impact was different. He was in the dissent. But when he had to be the vote, and listen, he put himself in this position. I don't know why he's made himself out to be another Kennedy. You don't have to have that on the court. You don't have to have the tiebreaker vote. But I do think that he likes the praise. I think he likes the media coverage of this today, in the sense that the liberal media, which is the mainstream media, is praising him. And I think he loves it. I think he loved it with the Affordable Care Act, even though he knew the people that got him to the Supreme Court couldn't figure out the reasoning. He just comes out and says it. I don't agree with their philosophy. Remember, we talked on Friday about typically the difference between these two sets of judges. Why everyone knew where this case went if Justice Breyer is the author is because it doesn't matter. He will come up with whatever. He'll go to international law, and he'll tell you. He will find law that agrees with his position somewhere that's sometime been written. And our guys are not supposed to be doing that, right? The guys on the right, the people who are coming with a judicial philosophy that's supposed to be a more conservative judicial philosophy, look at the Constitution, look at the history as well, but look at the Constitution itself. Does a state have this? Is this a federal government's role to step in here? And this case was actually, the difference between this and Texas also, this case was supposed to be about who had the standing.
Yeah.
It wasn't even supposed to be about undue burdens.
No, and the standing issue, I think, would have been the easy way out. I want to bring in CeCe Howells, senior counsel with the ACLJ, because what this also does not bode well for, and nobody wants to say this, but I'm going to, it does not bode well for an overturn of Roe versus Wade. CeCe?
Yeah, you know, we see that the court just keeps changing abortion laws and rules. And under Casey, of course, they required that there would be an undue burden imposed by the law. And then we saw in Whole Woman's Health, which was the previous case to this June case, that they couldn't prove that there was an undue burden. So the court changes and says, well, if there's no benefit or if it's unnecessary, that's going to equal the undue burden. And so, you know, it's that faulty assumption that abortion is safe and therefore admitting privileges are unnecessary. That's what this whole decision was based on. And we submitted a brief in this case that attacked that erroneous underlying assumption. But it just goes to show that the Supreme Court is willing to keep changing laws and even constitutional laws to protect the judicially fabricated right to abortion, and that doesn't bode well for an overturn of Roe v. Wade.
You know, there's another interesting aspect of this, and we did file, I'm holding in my hand, if you're watching on TV, the brief that we filed in the case, and this was about admitting privileges to hospitals, although I agree with Jordan, it could have been decided on standing. But what's interesting here, in our brief, we actually attach as an exhibit, and it's probably 65 pages, every time hospitals, ambulances were called to abortion clinics for medical services to be rendered in a hospital. That these doctors don't have to have admitting privileges for. I mean, think about that for a moment. And that was in the brief, and that was in the record, and they ignored. They ignored it to get to a desired result here, Andy. This was, in a sense, the shock to me is that Chief Justice Roberts, who I've known for many years, decided that a case that had 3 years of precedent that was closely divided could not be overturned.
Well, of course it could be overturned. Look, he ruled that the Texas law was constitutional. He was in the dissent. It was only 3 years ago. What has changed? What has changed? He comes up with this fabricated idea that, oh, I'm bound by precedent. Even though I didn't agree with that precedent, I'm bound by that precedent, and I've got to rule that way. No, you don't. You've got to rule by what the law is. And what the law in Louisiana was a constitutional exercise of that sovereign state's privilege to protect its citizens by saying that a doctor had to have admitting privileges in a hospital within 30 miles of where the abortion clinic, or may I say the death chamber, exists. And that was a perfectly proper exercise of the sovereign state's right to protect the safety and welfare of its citizens. Chief Justice Roberts did not have to do what he did in this case. And I'm very, very disappointed in him.
All right, folks, 1-800-684-3110. If we can answer your questions, get your comments as well at 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to Than Bin in Washington, D.C. Than, obviously, listen, we're an organization. We work on these nomination battles. John Roberts was a different time, obviously, now. But we do. I think that there is a question, Than, about, and I'm sure a lot of people are having, we talked about it on Friday. It's not that I'm not expecting to agree with Brett Kavanaugh or Neil Gorsuch or Justice Thomas or anybody, 99% of the time, like they are on the other side. I'm just not expecting that. Because I think if you actually take a philosophy and apply it, you can sometimes come out different ways, sure. and but at least we know it's grounding you. John Roberts threw that out the window today, so I think there's a new question now for the more conservative members of the U.S. Senate next time this happens, which is, we went through a suitor, and now we have a Roberts.
Jordan, if you find a judge that you agree with every time, that's not a judge, that's an advocate. But what you can request from a judge, or actually demand from a judge, is that they take the philosophy of judging. They look at the statute, they look at the Constitution, they look at the law, and they apply it as it was written. You have to expect from a judge that you don't have outcome-based judging. We've seen it on the left time and time again, and Jordan, it's why you said last week that we have got to do, we basically have to have a supermajority on the courts because you're not going to get a judge every single time while the left does. Let me tell you what this looks like to me, though, Jordan. This looks to me like an abandonment of apolitical judging. This looks like looking at the political tea leaves, the pressure in Washington, D.C., the social circles. I know that's insulting to say, but it's just reality. It exists here, Jordan. And this, to me, especially with such a recent opinion from the Chief Justice that said the exact opposite thing and a narrower law here, Jordan, it looks like to me that you have a judge that wants to be liked in those circles. I know that's an insult. I don't like to say it, but that's what it looks like to me.
All right, let's go to Tim's call in Colorado on line two. Tim, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. There was an editorial in the USA Today this weekend called "The Supreme Court was supposed to protect the separation of powers. Instead, it killed them." So I'd like your opinion on that. But my comment is with the recent Supreme Court ruling in the Title VII case, I think it's the other one is Bostock, and then the one you're talking about today. It seems the ideal ruling ruling on laws based on interpreting them in light of their original meaning seems lost on the members of the court. So it's great to hear that you've been talking about last week the Senate is filling the vacant federal court seats, but if the conservative judges do the same thing as the majority of the Supreme Court ones did in these cases and introduce meanings of the law foreign or contrary to their originally intended purpose, what good's going on? So my key question is, what do you know of that's being done to promote the implementation of proper interpretation of laws in the courts?
Well, look, I mean, here's what you learn quickly, and I've been doing Supreme Court work for going on my fourth decade here. That there was another case came out today. It was USAID. It was the foreign affiliates of various groups that were being denied funds because of positions they advocated. And these foreign groups were claiming First Amendment privileges. If you would have listened to the oral argument, you would have said the foreign groups are going to be protected in their speech, which I don't think they should have been necessarily, by the way. And the Supreme Court concluded that they were not protected. So it's very difficult to protect tea leaves. Here's the problem. Once you start straying from judicial philosophy, you enter a no man's land, a no person's land. And that is a situation it's Justice Kennedy. But Justice Kennedy, you know, he was quasi-predictable on certain areas. He was usually very good on religious freedom. My concern here with this opinion, and we still have a lot, we have 10 opinions or 9 opinions left to come. They may all come this week, not by this week, next week, is if the court politicizes its decisions like that, that can be very, very damaging.
Yeah, when you have a court that starts saying, and the Chief Justice of the court, so he thinks it's better for his legacy to say things like, I don't agree with how they got here, but I just like the conclusion. I mean, anybody could do that. Why go through those processes? And again, I think it shows some of this you look at. Part of this is lifetime appointments. Part of this is also they've taken lifetime appointments to mean they don't ever leave. So we've kind of made this. It's a different entity than it was by our founders.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Back to JSEC here live. We're going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I mean, listen, Chief Justice Thomas said in response directly to the Chief Justice in his dissent, despite the fact that we granted Louisiana's petition specifically to address, I mean, whether abortion providers can be presumed to have third-party standing. I mean, that was the initial reason why they even made a difference between this case and the Texas case, to challenge health and safety regulations on behalf of their patients. Chief Justice cast aside this jurisdictional barrier to conclude that Louisiana's law is unconstitutional under our precedents. So, I think it's been clear, again, everyone's not a John Roberts. Everyone is not a Kennedy. Everyone is not a Souter. I think it's been tougher. First, conservatives didn't really get involved in this until much later than I think the left. So the left,
the abortion issue.
Well, it wasn't even that partisan. I mean, if you look at Roe v. Wade, mostly Republican nominees to the court.
Yeah,
Planned Parenthood supported Planned Parenthood. This was kind of when social conservatives, Catholics got more involved in the pro-life effort. Then it was Protestant churches started actually even talking about things like abortion. Which, if it was related to anything about sex,
a lot of the denominations were pro-choice for a long, long time, into the 70s, and I think it was until the 80s that, for instance, the Southern Baptist changed. But I don't want people to lose hope here, because we've also seen significant wins on the life issue out of the Supreme Court, CC, especially in our defense of crisis pregnancy centers.
Yeah, we've seen legislation pushed to shut down pro-life centers, typically tried in more liberal states. We've had cases in New York and California, as well as others, where we successfully represented pro-life centers against laws that were basically forcing them to promote abortion or to refer for abortion. And, you know, we won on that these laws cannot compel speech from pro-life centers that don't agree with what the pro-life center stands for.
Yeah, so again, and those were significant wins, and those were at the Supreme Court, and we had a couple of those cases. I think we had two that were up there on that we won. So it's not like we're not seeing victories. But Andy, the concern is here. I mean, I think people are looking at the last couple of decisions, and you shouldn't judge any justice by two decisions. But you look at the decisions that are coming out, and there's reason for concern.
There is reason for concern. I agree with what Jordan was saying. There's a certain glamour that the Chief Justice seems to be entranced with, the media spotlight that he gets whenever he rules with the left and whenever he goes with the liberals. It's very nice when you go to Washington cocktail parties to be courted by the liberal left and say how great a decision you did. And I think he has fallen prey to this, Jay, because, you know, he has done things like in the Obamacare decision, like in this decision today, that just do not support the philosophy that he maintained throughout his judicial career. So what's this all about?
Yeah, well, I mean,
you thought a decision was wrong 3 years ago, and now today you say, well, I've got to change my vote because even though I thought that was wrong, stare decisis says I'm compelled to do the opposite. Not true.
But it is not true because, as I pointed out, there's been a lot of decisions that has been turned, you know, the Supreme Court has changed their mind and have reversed the previous decisions. It happens all the time. Let's go ahead and take a call, and now I want to play this Pete Williams by coming back up.
Let's go to Kristen in Maine on line one. Kristen, welcome to JSEC Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay and Jordan. Thank you for all that you do. My question is, well, first of all, I'm really grieved by the decisions that Justice Roberts has been making. But I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do as citizens to contact him to let him know? I know we can as senators, but...
Yeah, no, you can't, because it's a lifetime appointment, as I believe it should be, even when you disagree with the justice's conclusion. So I don't want to take that away from the Constitution's clear on that. There's no way to express your grievance as far as directly to the justice, and that would frankly be inappropriate. And look, there's some other decisions coming that, you know, we may be pleased about Justice Roberts' decisions. I don't know. I thought he did a very admirable job, for instance, a very good job in the impeachment proceeding. He handled it with dignity and with decorum. He handled it with sticking to the law. He was the John Roberts that, when he said during his confirmation proceeding, I call him balls and strikes, an umpire. An umpire doesn't say, though, in my view, well, the last time we called it a ball, so this next one has to be a ball, too. And I think, CeCe, that's kind of where he got it wrong here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even as I read his words, they were just shocking. The fact that, you know, I didn't agree with the whole woman's health decision. It was wrongly decided, but it doesn't matter. Right or wrong, I have to adhere to it in deciding this present case. And that's just, you know, that's not true. It was a cop-out. That was a bad statement and a bad decision.
Well, it's also, what's the point of the Supreme Court then? Why relitigate any issue if we know that they're just going to go back to, why don't we have three-fifths? Why do we have Dred Scott? Why do we have these cases even? Why do we go back and fight for these issues? And also, why give them that authority they have? Why not go back to pre-Marbury versus Madison, when the court was basically a court for, there'd be issues, obviously, where they would make a big decision, but they didn't have any, no one really cared what they decided. It wasn't something you stayed on for your whole life. Because if they're so impacted by the media, and if they're so impacted by who's at their party and who's at their event, and more so than you'd think, by the way, a lot of them, it gets very tough to figure out, okay, who could you actually get through the U.S. Senate process now? Because that's now basically whoever's in control. It's gotten down to 51.
Yeah, I was going to ask Thane. I mean,
there's no filibuster anymore.
Yeah,
right?
No filibuster. You know, could you get a vacancy this summer? You can always get a vacancy, so you don't know. How's it going to play out? I mean, it's all dependent on the election, unless there's a vacancy before. If there was a vacancy before, Than, do you think the Senate could get a nominee through?
Yes, I do. I think they'd fill it. Leader McConnell has said the same thing. I mean, Jay, you need a president willing to nominate and a Senate willing to confirm. Look, if the Senate didn't want to confirm, they wouldn't have to.
Nominating. I don't think that would be the issue. My concern would be whether the Senate could get it done, and you're saying they can.
Well, and the last time around, Jay, you didn't have the two components that the Constitution requires in order to get the confirmation. The Senate is perfectly welcome to sit on it if they want, but I suspect that this Senate would want to move if the president nominated a new justice. And I will go back to something that Jordan said a minute ago. For much of the last decade, Jay, there was a double standard. When a Republican nominated a justice, it required 60 votes to overcome cloture. But when a Democrat president appointed a justice, it only required 50 because Republicans were not willing to filibuster. We have only been on a level ground as far as confirming justices to the Supreme Court for a very short period of time now. So yes, this is a very disappointing ruling. But Jay and Jordan, look, if you get a little bit more time where the level field is playing, maybe some of that dynamic in Washington where there's justices that sit on the court that want to be comfortable for the rest of their life term, maybe that starts to change.
Well, you have to wonder, too, is it better to have someone battle-tested like Brett Kavanaugh and Justice Thomas? Not saying anybody would ever want to go through what they've gone through with Justice Thomas went through and what Brett Kavanaugh went through, but battle-tested nominees. You think about, remember, the Gorsuch vote. I mean, if you actually look at the vote, it barely gets on the court. So I think it changes how they think about things. And with John Roberts, too, I think he's kind of forgotten the process he went through. We'll be right back. I'm Jay Sekulow Live. Take your phone calls in the second half hour, 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. As always, we encourage you to go to ACLJ.org as well. Check out our new school choice initiative at ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about, Dad, the case at the U.S. Supreme Court. It was June Medical Service. I'll hold our brief here for folks to see who are watching on Facebook and Periscope, but this is the case at the U.S. Supreme Court, a similar case back to a case out of Texas. And people had high hopes for this because the court there is a very different court. I mean, John Roberts kind of blew through that, too. The court has shifted significantly.
Yeah.
Since then. That's why it was even got to why the case was even heard, likely.
Let's set up for everybody. I think it's important, Jordan, to set up for everybody that there was a case in 2016 that was basically the same, a broader statute.
It had
statute.
Admitting privileges.
Okay.
So it covered the admitting privileges. It had other issues, too. So you had to not just have...
If you're going to perform abortions,
you also had to have ambulatory care at your facility. Now, that's pretty low level. I mean, there's not these highest standards. But you had to have these different new categories of it's not even restrictions, because you weren't saying you couldn't do something. You're saying these are the standards you have to have.
Yeah, like if you walked into your
dentist's
office.
I mean, right now we're all seeing how people can say, well, the county or the city has come in and said, you all need to be doing something. Or if you're going to conduct business, you must do this. And some cities and states have the authorities to do that. Some don't. Depends on where you live in the country right now, depending on what kind of power your governor has, what kind of power your mayor has. And it changes depending on what state you live in, depending on what county you live in. And so that's something I think we're all seeing right now.
Yeah.
But the Texas law was basically, if you were going to have this decision after this, you didn't need to take this case.
So they decided the one in 2016, and they held by a 5-4 majority that the law was unconstitutional. Then Justice Robert was in the dissent. Now, a even narrower law, Justice Roberts sides with the majority to strike it down. And Andy, again, I want to reiterate this, he rests it on stare decisis. Explain to everybody what that means and how it applies here.
Stare decisis is a legal concept that says once cases are decided in a certain way based on certain facts, if identical facts or closely identical facts appear in subsequent cases, then the law has to be applied in the same way. That gives stability to ruling so that we can predict what courts are going to do. But stare decisis should not be a basis to rule wrongly in a case. When a case is wrong and the Supreme Court of the United States has to say it's wrong, then stare decisis should go out the window and we should decide the case on the law as it is and the facts as they are. Now, Chief Justice Roberts says that the Texas case, that was a 5-3 decision, by the way, Jay, he said that was wrongly decided, and he ruled that way. Now, on the identical facts and the same law, essentially, he says, well, I'm bound by a wrongly decided case. What kind of nonsense is that? How disappointing. I thought we had a man up there who was a leader, who was the Chief Justice, who had a philosophy that was a good pro-life conservative philosophy, and yet he falls prey to the liberals. Very disappointing to me.
You're supposed to be a judge. He said his rule as a judge is to call them balls and strikes. And as I said in the first half hour, and I'll say it again, what that does not mean, though, if the last pitch was a ball, that means this pitch is a ball. And that's what he did here. He kind of... You know, It was a ball then, and even though I think it, you know, it could have been a strike, it's a ball then, even though I wanted it to be a strike, well, now the same pitch comes, and I'm going to call it a ball again, even though I thought it was a strike. I mean, it's the whole thing makes no sense.
And he said that in his opinion. I mean, it's not like we're putting these words in his mouth. He literally said he did not agree with their reasoning, but the conclusion. So that's what they do. On the other side of judicial philosophy is go find somewhere, some statute and some interpretation, even if it's from an international court, a foreign court, somewhere else outside of the United States, that somehow came to the conclusion I want. I'll take that. That's good for me. And then, because I don't care about the philosophy of getting to the point, I know what I agree with. So I know if it's a strike or a ball before I've even made up my mind on how to get to that point.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your calls. I want to go to Timothy's call right off the bat in Missouri. He's been holding on. Timothy, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yes. Wondering, and you know, listening to your other callers, what can we do? Because this is a Supreme Court, and they made this ruling that it can't be challenged. Is it time for a constitutional convention to change these lifetime appointments? Is it time for something like this? Is they obviously aren't playing by the law and going by this. Is it time for that?
Well, I think, listen, to a sense, it's up to us. We decide, you know, education and what philosophies people are pushed on people, whether they're in law school, regardless of if they think they're Republican or Democrat, too, by the way. I mean, kind of throw that to the wind because these get kind of go past that. So what philosophy are you being taught? How are you taught to get there? I'll tell you, in most law schools, the philosophy would be exactly what John Roberts said today. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't care about how I got to get there. Don't look at how the sausage is made. But this is where I'm going to be on this because, and then he's falling back on precedent from 3 years. I mean, 3 years. 3 years.
That's not stare decisis.
No, that's not. I mean, that's a case that came before us a few years ago where I was on this side and I'm still on this side. The court changed. The makeup, the composition significantly. You would think he would have taken the same reasoning and been in the same place. But he didn't do that with the Affordable Care Act either. Remember, he came up with, it is a tax. Even though they told us it's not a tax, in court, while they're here, and I pushed them on that, I gave them that opening, they still said no. Oh, really, they're going to tell me yes, so I'll go with that with them. And it's an administrative procedures act.
I was always concerned about that issue, but, you know, again. Now, I want to play something from Pete Williams because he talks about a double victory here, and then we'll get everybody's comment. Take a listen.
This is sort of a double victory, if you will, for advocates of abortion rights, because on the one hand, the Supreme Court strikes down the Louisiana law, which was really never went into force in completely. And secondly, with the Chief Justice joining the majority today, they say that that these groups, these clinics, these doctors, these abortion rights advocates can challenge abortion law. So it's a double victory.
And what he's saying there is, because there was the dissent talks about how there was no standing. It wasn't a woman seeking abortion that was filing the suit here. It was the owners of the medical clinic. And Andy, a decision that focuses not on a standing principle, which would have been an easy way to decide this case, also is concerning.
Jay, you know, standing means you have a right because you have a direct interest in the outcome of the litigation to challenge a particular statute or to say that the statute is constitutional. What possible person other than the woman has the standing? The abortion clinic and the doctors, in my view, do not. Chief Justice Roberts had the easy way out. He could have said that the standing did not exist on the part of the clinic, that it was the woman who had the right, not the doctors and not the clinic. That's first-year constitutional law. I don't know what possessed him not to look at that simple standard of standing and say that this law could not be challenged by those who were challenging it.
Well, you know, Jordan, this raises a question I want you and Than to comment on, and that is people. There's going to be a frustration level.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, John Roberts, conservative, you can go through the history and this happens. Now, like I said, we may be surprised with tomorrow by decisions we agree with. So who knows?
The pressure campaign by the left is on a different level.
Go ahead.
I think that people, you may not realize it, folks. I don't know where you live in the country. I'm talking to people who live in the bluest of blue states right now and the reddest of red. But I know a lot of you probably don't necessarily, if you agree with what we're saying here on the broadcast, so if you agree with where we're coming from philosophically, you might not be surrounded by this world in D.C. that I'm not even talking about like Republican, Democrat, because I think it's more to the media, more to the legal community, and the world that they travel in, who they've gotten used to. That's weird. It's not like John Roberts doesn't know Brett Kavanaugh for his entire life. I mean, like, basically entire adult careers. It's not like, and obviously Brett Kavanaugh was serving on the D.C. court, you know, where by the way, John Roberts came from. And so you've got, and again, so it's all based in Washington, D.C., and these are big positions. But I think the idea that somehow over these couple decades in, the media pressure, you might mostly listen to broadcasts like ours. We're on a new station, too. I want to welcome WLFE in Miami, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time each day. That's WLFE. So we're excited you all have the full hour of the broadcast of Jay Sekulow Live. But depending on where you are, kind of like what media affects you, and it's on these issues like abortion, where you have the two interest groups on each side, you have pro-life, pro-abortion, but then you have all of this in between, these restrictions there. And John Roberts had a clear philosophy on this.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I think the frustration comes from our people have never seen it happen the other way. And our folks out there.
Except Byron Wright, which most people don't remember.
But I do think most of that is the pressure campaign.
So, Than, I was going to ask you the same thing. I could see the frustration building with conservatives as they talk about votes. We put all our energy into these confirmation battles, and we spend a lot of resources, and people spend a lot of time, and then you don't know. Now, that's part of the American system, is you're not going to tell a justice how they're going to rule in a particular case.
You've just got to redouble the efforts, Jay. I mean, the recourse is not to walk away when the stakes are so high. I completely agree with Jordan that the recourse here is to change the narrative. Here's what we've got to do. We've just got to tell the truth. Jay, this law was written to protect women. That's why the standing question that you've been talking about is so important here. Here's the tragic reality, and you alluded to this, but I want to say this again. In our brief, Jay, there's an appendix in the back with the last decade of ambulance visits, but we open this brief with the list, a partial list of ambulance visits to abortion clinics in 2019 alone. This is the tragic truth that the American people need to know so that someone like Chief Justice Roberts doesn't feel like it's socially acceptable only to rule a certain way. Ambulances leave abortion clinics with women in the back of them, Jay, and they need life-saving care. This law did not speak to the legality of abortion. This law said that when that ambulance leaves that clinic, that woman can get life-saving care. So, Jay, we've got to change the narrative. This was not a pro-choice ruling. This was an anti-women ruling. And that's something that the Chief Justice needs to hear. Down the road, further justices need to hear it as well. That's just the truth.
Personally, I think what will happen if conservatives continue, and I'd say this, is if conservatives continue to be the ones elected within the Republican Party, so obviously we'll have elections, there'll be ups, there'll be downs, but if conservatives, I'm not sure they're going to buy anymore those excuses of an answer. So if it's going to be a confirmation vote of 52, just tell me if you're going to overturn Roe versus Wade or not. Or else I'm not going to move you forward. You're done. Your career is over. We're not going to just, because that's not a hypothetical. That is something I want to know. Are you willing? How about this question? Will you overturn precedents? Do you care if something is stare decisis? Does that matter to you? But get past that. I think the left does that. The left requires you to say, oh, well, they confirmed to me that they would not overturn Roe versus Wade. But our guys are afraid, Than. I think we may be entering that new world. Hey, we have Senator Hawley's now. We have people saying the way we've done things, we need to take our scrutiny to the next level. I understand what he's saying. He's not saying it's not the process itself. That's the Constitution. It's not that you're going to get 99.9. I don't think we ever think that as conservatives, because we're not like that. We're not so uniform. But the scrutiny could be turned up 10 notches.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that goes back to the double standard of the last decade, Jordan, and you're not asking for outcome-based judging. You're just asking for a judge to look through the same philosophical rubric every single time. I mean, look, how can you come up with a ruling in 2016, look at essentially the same set of facts, except even narrower, and come up with a different ruling? Jordan, that is outcome-based judging. So it's not putting a litmus test forward, but it is saying you've got to look at similar cases through the same rubric so there's predictability in how you're going to judge, because after all, you don't get to write the laws. We elect a legislature to do that.
When we come back from the break, Andy, I'm going to play a statement from Senator Schumer that kind of finished the last segment off. But I'm reading the Alito dissent right now, and he pretty much eviscerates the Chief Justice's reasoning on stare decisis. Andy?
Yes. Of course, Justice Alito is a true conservative. He is a person with principles. He is a person who understands when stare decisis should be applied and when it should not be applied. And his dissent, as well as that of Justice Thomas, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, state what the law really should be in this case. And it is a shame that Chief Justice Roberts did not take a page out of Justice Alito's book. Justice Alito's dissent, which unfortunately is not the law because it is the dissent, stated the case perfectly and succinctly. Justice Roberts should have taken a page out of that and followed his colleague's opinion.
All right, folks, we are taking phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've got another segment coming up, so we'll get to your calls when we come back. That's what we do in our final segment. So if you've got questions or comments about this, 1-800-684-3110. Do you agree that these maybe? And I think it pushes you there. You have to do more than one day of thought, not just react. But you have to wonder, should we be... I don't want to take the left's approach to this. I think they've taken it to a level that is out of control. But, why do we accept... I'm not going to answer that question. So that we can get 51 votes. What if our folks said, I'm not going to give you my vote to get over that line. You're not going to get this lifetime job at the Supreme Court of the United States with your fancy robe, unless you answer the question.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
This for a minute with Chuck Schumer.
This is on your pressure campaign.
Yeah, because I said that the pressure is immense. I do think where they lose is that if, and I think they miscalculate, is that when you put someone through the ringer like a Kavanaugh, like a Thomas, or even like a Gorsuch where they barely get confirmed, I think that they're a little bit more battle-tested. Now, in John Roberts' case, it was still not like a giant, it wasn't like, you know, but I will go back to this with Chuck Schumer. This was his threat that he made to Kavanaugh and Gorsuch if they decide a case a certain way. Take a listen.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Okay. You won't know what hit you. You've paid a price. If we use language like that, it'd be a headline right now in the news in 15 minutes. Because people would say, oh, are they supporting people who are, you know, exercising a Second Amendment right to surround the court? Are, you know, are they now, are they supporting violence? Are they gonna, are they calling on violence or for violent overthrow of the court? But if Chuck Schumer says it, well, since no one can imagine him, I guess, handling a firearm, maybe no one thinks that.
Or, and this was, by the way, those were statements that Chuck Schumer made around this opinion.
Oh, he came
around
at,
this court.
He came out
argument
during after the oral argument. And said that to the protesters who were there in Washington D.C. He did on the steps of the Supreme Court.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw this one again to Andy, and I want to go back to Than on it from a political standpoint. Andy, from a legal standpoint, this pressure campaign that I think Jordan aptly names is really counter to what our constitutional lifetime appointments are supposed to prevent. We don't have pressure campaigns because we're here for life.
Well, you're not supposed to yield to pressure. You're supposed to, you get your job according to the Constitution, what's called during good behavior. That's what the Constitution says. But instead of yielding to your own sense of your judicial philosophy, you do yield to pressure. And I remember Schumer screaming his head off about Gorsuch and Kavanaugh after the oral argument. And you know what's ironic, Jay, is the fact, if you recall, that the Chief Justice criticized Schumer for making those statements, didn't
yeah.
he? He came out and condemned him and said, what a terrible thing. And yet, in this decision today, he capitulated to that thing and seems to have said, oh, but I'm going to be afraid to rule myself, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and now Roberts is in that. No, I'm going to play to the liberal left when I could have easily followed what I decided in the Texas case, followed the idea that there is no standing and done the right thing. So he's caved.
Yes.
So
Robert, well, does it surprise you? It's the same court that said it. 3/5 of a human can be counted that way.
Yeah.
Same court. They're human beings and not, you know, it's how far does technology have to get? They have to watch the kid's head get ripped off? Outside? I mean, I don't know. Does it have to be 3D, 4D, 5D? I don't know. We don't even have that D yet, maybe. To a point where they finally are so embarrassed by what they've done that they ignore that it even happened in recent history. Go back in the 1960s Supreme Court, same court did Roe versus Wade. You probably don't agree with a lot of what they decided. But they love Roe versus Wade. That's fine. Let's go to Deborah calling in. Let's go to Karen first. She's been holding on in Georgia on line one. Karen, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi. I just had a question about the STAR-A decisis.
Yes.
How that is different from precedent, because I thought that with precedent, you almost can't vote against precedent.
You can't. Precedent is stare decisis. Andy and I'll talk about this here. So the court has gotten things wrong in its history. They got wrong the separate but equal doctrine. They got wrong, that was Plessy versus Ferguson. They got wrong Dred Scott, that black Americans were only 3/5 of a citizen for counting purposes. And they got other cases wrong, and they have reversed the course. Korematsu, where they were interring Japanese Americans during World War II. These are horrific decisions. And then the court walks away from them. And stare decisis also, Andy, implies time. That it's been so embedded into our constitutional analysis that it would just be an earthquake to undo it.
That's right. It doesn't mean that wrongly decided cases have to keep being wrongly decided because previous ones were wrongly decided. That means that when you see a case that has good precedent to it, that is abides by the law and the facts before you, you follow that precedent in ruling. That's okay. But stare decisis should not be a vehicle for the perpetuation of wrongs that have existed before, such as the Plessy decision, Dred Scott, and the ones that Jay has cited. So what Justice Roberts does is he fails to understand stare decisis is not an immutable concept that must be applied in every case where the prior case that you're applying has been wrongly decided. And didn't he say in the Texas case it was wrongly decided? Yes. Well, why don't you stick to your guns, Mr. Chief Justice?
Yeah. There's an interesting, we're going to get to our last caller in a second here, but there's an interesting quote from Cecile Richards, who used to be the head of Planned Parenthood. Take a listen to this.
I think it's very worrisome. I mean, we have an administration that has now packed the federal judiciary, including these two Supreme Court justices, with judges who are against women's rights, against the right to safe and legal abortion.
You know, I'm thinking, first of all, they won. So, I mean, that's number one. Number two, they're talking about, I guess, in the context of the election fan. This is a double-edged sword. I mean, for conservatives, too. Because sometimes conservative judges aren't so conservative.
I would say she's correct on this, Jay. I mean, it wasn't quite enough in this case, but 200 judges that I'm sure Planned Parenthood is not happy about. And by the way, they were the ones that organized that rally that Chuck Schumer spoke about, and they get $600 million of taxpayer funding, so she might be worried about that as well. But Jay, if I could, just very quickly, here's the other thing she's scared of. Life is winning, because when mothers see these 4D images, they're choosing life more and more. Medical advances are showing that babies survive at an earlier age. I'm personally involved in a case where a baby born at 25 weeks gestation is now thriving. Jay, I'll tell you this. Cecile Richards, she might have had a temporary win this week. She's got an awful lot to be worried about, though.
Yeah,
life is winning.
Culturally, things that... You know, if you have to wait for a court to say something is illegal, that's not necessarily saying a lot about you, about like our culture and where we are. And listen, I know a lot of people are questioning a lot of this right now because it's a kind of a wild time, let's be honest, to be whether. And also, it depends highly on where you are in the country right now. If you watch on Facebook and Periscope and we're back in a studio, you know, it's different than where other offices are and how your office may be and how work may be here or what TV you're watching, how it looks different. There's a reason behind that. It's because things have not gotten back to normal, and then there's been some changes. So I do believe that some of this we can change culturally, like Than just said. People are going to make the decision on their own. We might put Planned Parenthood might be out of business, not because they, you know, only because they get federal tax funding, but because no one's going to be willing to support it. Maybe like what's happened to social media companies, who have been caught, you know, they've allowed ISIS and all those other groups to say whatever they wanted to say. Oh, and then finally the people realize, hey, maybe everything that Facebook and Twitter wasn't allowing was great, considering that's how ISIS organized itself as a terror group, was by using these social media platforms that pick and choose winners and losers as they go. But who is it up to? It's up to the people. If people stop going to Planned Parenthood, people say it's too risky, it's too dangerous for me, and I think I'm killing a human being, there won't be a Planned Parenthood. It doesn't matter what John Roberts says. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live. As always, we encourage you to go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We've got, again, our brand new school choice initiative. Again, that's how you change significantly where these courts go, but also where our culture goes. aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.